Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
The farther you get away from the football, the farther you get away from football.
Olin Krutz.
You get in any kind of trouble now, you just tell them you know Kalooks.
Who is Kalooks and do you know him?
I don't know Kalooks.
14-year NFL veteran.
Do you want to outsmart them or do you want to beat them up when you win football games? And for me, when I look at the Chicago Bears, the way they build their team, they want to outsmart guys.
Six-time Pro Bowler and four-time NFL All-Pro.
In my opinion, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, there's no doubt about that in my mind. There was a 4 or 5 years, 6 years in a row that he was the best in the league at his position. So that's the guy you want to look up to.
Football analyst for 670 The Score.
Luther Burden, heard a lot about him. I'm just waiting for the poem about Luther Burden. I'm sure that's coming out. This coach could lead us to a winning season, how poetic that would be. Coach Johnson's talking about there's a stumble bum. I'm sure that was right before his beautiful poem. Anyway, Ben Johnson, he knows exactly what he wants to do with Loveland. He knows exactly the poem he wants to write with his new tight end.
I take it you weren't that impressed with the poetry.
Yeah, I'd rather not talk about it. I just want to mention it 100 times in the show.
That's very passive aggressive of you.
Yes, it is. It's extremely passive aggressive of me.
Olin Krutz with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Oh my God. Absolutely delightful. Olin Krutz joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Olin, would you like to talk about Ben Johnson, the poem, or just refer to it a few dozen times, perhaps?
Just refer to it a few dozen times while we go through this hit here.
I actually think passive-aggressive is good for you. That's better than aggressive at this point, right, Olin?
I feel like that's
progress for you, yes?
Yes, I'm being taught, you know, I now with my two boys in Illinois, I'm in the house with five women. So I learn really well. That's the aggressive fact, everybody. You know? So I've been learning from them. I'm always a student, always trying to learn from people.
It's a softer version of you.
In all honesty, though, like, take us inside. If a coach or a player does something that is a little bit ridiculous or absurd to others, you guys can then give them the business about it, and as long as they can laugh about it, everybody's all good, right? That's how it works.
Yeah, it's all fun, right? And in a team that can laugh and joke about everything and get through things, obviously, an NFL season is long, right? It's a long season. A lot of things happen. A lot of things are said, and a lot of feelings get hurt. So the faster you can laugh about it and get over it and get through things, usually the better football team you are.
Hey, man, that's all of us. Let's all stop taking ourselves so damn seriously, and we'll all do a lot better. Don't you think, Groats?
Hey, man, I'm totally going to be passive-aggressive for the rest of the show.
Keep it coming.
Yep.
So nothing's changed for you.
No, Marcus, he's still exactly who he is. You know what he said? He said, Olin, as we were talking about doing this hit, is like, man, Olin's probably got to be pretty psyched because the Bears finally used a draft asset on an offensive lineman. I mean, it might be a swing tackle. We'll see. But how about it? A second round draft pick on a tackle. What were your thoughts on them using an asset like that?
Well, I mean, they also drafted Darnell Wright, right? And Karan Amagaji last year in the third round. So they've been drafting guys and just waiting for someone to develop into, I think Coach Wansett likes to call them blue, right? Blue players, elite
elite football players that you need on that offensive line. But it's always good to see them taking offensive linemen like Ozzie Trapillo, who a lot of people have respect for. Big guy, right? Can move, blocks well. A lot of people saw him as a swing tackle. A lot of people saw him more as a right tackle. Interesting to see here Ryan Poles talk about we're going to start him over there on the left side and see how he develops, because a lot of people didn't see him that way going into the draft. But we will see. And like you're saying, we've been calling for a lot of years for them to put more assets into that O-line room. And you can't complain about the amount of assets they put into their offensive line room this year with the center, Dahlman, right, with they're going to move Jonah Jackson to right guard with Tooney at left guard, and now Trapillo, and then, you know, they had another draft pick, Luke Newman, in the sixth round. So they've been adding guys, Toronto Magaji, Darnell Wright. Now we just want to see that group take another step.
Is it realistic to think, Olin, you mentioned that Ryan Poles said that they want to work Trapillo out at left tackle. Is it realistic to think that he could actually start at left tackle to begin this season?
It is realistic to think that when you think about where Braxton Jones is with his injury, right, and where he's coming off of, and they got to see where he's at after minicamp and going through the summer and going through training camp, and then Karan Amagaji and Trapillo battling maybe for that left tackle job, right? They play next to Joe Tooney, who will help a lot. Obviously, Tooney will help having a veteran presence there at left guard, a guy who's played at an all-pro level, who's played a lot of football, will help a young offensive tackle there. But it is, I think, Grody, and you're on the team a lot more than me, I think it is realistic to think that this guy could start there at left tackle as long as he shows that he can handle that position. And you got to count on, obviously, the quarterback taking another step, becoming a better football player, the ball coming out faster, and him making everybody around him better.
It's interesting to hear Bill O'Brien on the station this week, Olin, talk about how Ozzie Trapillo moved from left to right, in his words, principally because they had another kid there who could only play left. Like, he's left-handed and could only set up there, but Ozzie was somebody who could do both. Can Braxton do both? Like, if Braxton ends up as the swing for some reason, should we feel good about his ability to do both? Can anybody do both these days?
Well, I'll answer that simply. Braxton Jones could do both at Boston College, right? But doing it in the NFL is a totally different thing. So Ozzie Trapillo, we will see if he can move over and do both and play at a high level, at a level that you need to play at to protect the quarterback's blind side. So we will see. I didn't think Trapillo was a guy, when you came into the draft, I didn't think he was a guy you were going to take and start him at left tackle. But it'll be interesting seeing. The Bears have done a lot more work on him than I have. Obviously, their scouts have watched a lot more film and talked to a lot of people like Bill O'Brien, like his strength coach, like his offensive line coach down there at Boston College. If you ask me personally, after watching film, I think it's a little bit of a reach to ask him to start there at left tackle early in the year. But again, if you put a really good left guard next to him, a really good center, your quarterback is taking a step. You have all these, you know, you have Rome Odunze, who took ninth in the draft. He took Loveland there at tight end, right? You have DJ Moore. You have a lot of weapons to protect one. You can't have an all-pro guys at every position, right? They have flooded that offense with a lot of talent. They went out and got what a lot of people consider was the best play caller in the NFL and made him the head coach, right? They put a lot of assets on that offense side of the ball. Now it's time for that thing to all come together, and you can't have all pros at every position. So they need a guy to raise their level, come up and come and take that job. Be ready to compete, right? Be ready to compete for that left tackle spot. That's what we do here in Chicago. We find one spot on the offense, and we worry like hell about it.
Yes, we do. To your point about how you can't have gold at every position, you can't have all pro at every position, the Bears are entering a season in which they kind of missed out on the rush of running backs. I mean, I think it was in their mind to take one of those running backs. They do get Kyle Manunguy. But should we look at DeAndre Swift differently because of Drew Dahlman, Joe Tooney, and Jonah Jackson? Does he deserve the benefit of the doubt like everybody else seems to be getting because the offensive line in theory is better now?
Yeah, I think he does, but also you can turn on his Eagles film and see him with the best offensive line in the league, right? And you can see what you got on film. That's why I was a little bit shocked last year when he came here and everybody was shocked that he wasn't running downhill between the tackles. That's not what he does, right? He didn't do that in Philadelphia. He didn't do that in Detroit, and he didn't do that here. So I was not shocked, but obviously, going into the season, you want to give a guy the benefit of the doubt. I watched when Kyle, his name always gets me, man.
Manunguy. Yeah. Manunguy, yeah, it's a weird one.
You know, my son's played against him. My son plays linebacker for Illinois. We watched this guy. This guy is tough, guys, man. Now, you worry about that translating to the NFL with his size, right? You worry about that downhill style. But I watched this guy drag piles. I remember telling my son, you better strap the hell up after watching him on film, because this guy is going to run downhill, run into your chest. He's going to do pass pro. He does everything right. When they took him, I was like, oh, I remember watching that kid. That kid is a tough, hard-nosed football player. So they added to that room. A lot of people thought they got a steal there in the seventh round. I'm one of those guys. I think they got a little bit of a steal. Now, how he translates to the NFL with his physical attributes, nothing jumps out at you, right? Nothing really jumps out at you in what he does. You wonder if that'll translate, you know, running over college kids and running over NFL guys. I'm going to tell you guys, it's two totally different things. But there's no way you can't like his film coming out of Rutgers. There's no way you can't like the way he played football for his team, the way he battled, how many carries he had, the things he did. So it'll be interesting going to that. But, you know, Grody, to your question, yeah, I mean, you want to see Swift, right, with Tooney, Jonah Jackson, and Dahlman, the three in the middle, right, that they got, they put up a Brinks truck, backed it up, and dumped it to the middle of their offensive line, all that money to protect their young quarterback. Yeah, I'd like to see the way he could run behind those guys. And I don't know if we're going to have an option. Like, that's who you're going to have there at running back when you decide to take, you know, a tight end, and then you had to take a receiver the year before. You have another receiver in DJ Moore. A lot of weapons there to play with, a lot of things to beat other teams with. We will see as they go into the season.
You know, a lot of teams in the NFL will go ahead and hand at least the shared starter role of running back to a rookie. They'll just go ahead and do it these days. It's very common practice. So as they seem to, like, miss out on whether it was Henderson or Judkins from Ohio State or some of the other guys, then they would keep trading down. I'm with you, O. I think they're going to give this kid, even though he's seventh round, I think they're going to give him a real shot, sort of like the Chiefs did with Isaiah Pacheco, a seventh rounder. Like, you can find guys in the seventh round sometimes, especially at the skill positions, where they're not big, tough linemen like you. Oh, like, they're just, you know, they're just runners. but it's like, I'll be okay if they don't go get a Nick Chubb or a J.K. Mm-hmm. Dobbins, and they start with Manungai and Swift and let's see who else on
Roshan,
that. Maybe Roshan
or Roshan,
Ian Wheeler, who's so super speedy. If he comes back healthy, he looked good in camp last year. Like, I'm okay with it. Are you okay with it if they don't bring in another vet?
Yeah, I mean, I'll see what Coach Bieniemy. I have a lot of respect for Coach Eric Bieniemy. I think a lot of people do in the NFL, and that's the guy they hired to get into that off that running back room and develop the young running backs. But yes, I like I just told you guys, I'm a fan of the young running back they took in the seventh round. I'd like to see him get some shots at that job. Obviously, I think the guys you mentioned, I don't think you're going to have to give them a ton of money to get them in there, especially with Chubb's history, injury history. I know he is a good running back before, but he's only played, I think, 10 games in the last 2 years. So there's some worry there of what he is, what he has left. Can he overcome that injury? Maybe you can get him for a bargain price. And like we talked about the offensive line room, why not put more guys into a room? And you're going to need, Spiegs, you just mentioned, you're going to need more than one running back during the year. Rarely do you see a guy make it through all 17 games, right? You're going to need guys to carry get the carries late in the season, middle of the season. You need a bunch of guys there to carry the workload. The Bears don't seem like they have that one star guy who's going to do all the work, right? Who's going to catch balls out of the backfield, who's going to run downhill between tackles. So why not do it by committee?
Olin Krutz is with us here on Spiegel and Holmes on The Score. This was a draft that, while it was happening, there were a few times where I was like, huh? What are they doing, huh? And maybe I just fell for some of the narratives that were out there in the draft prep, and I was a part of them, of course. But I've been able to contextualize and kind of, like, think about it and be like, oh, okay, I get that one. Okay, I get that one. Is there any pick that still sits a little weird with you? Any pick that you're still like, boy, I don't really get that. I don't understand exactly what the thought is with this particular guy.
Yeah, the only one I would say is, you know, when they took Luther Burden in the second round, who is a great football player, another guy that I've been hearing about for years playing over there at East St. Louis, right? He played the same years as my boys, and they were like, you got to watch this kid play football, and he is a hell of a football player. But I saw that they took him, and I saw New Orleans was after. New Orleans already took a tackle there in the first round. So I thought to myself, perfect time to take Ursary out of Minnesota, right? Mm-hmm. The kid who was Big Ten Offensive Lineman of the Year. Answer your left tackle question. You need a left tackle? Take the left tackle who's the Big Ten Offensive Lineman of the Year out of the University of Minnesota. So, hey, look, I'm not like that. I'm not high on Ozzie Tripillo. I am. I just thought that would have been a good pick. But they turned into two picks, and they got Shamar Turner, who a lot of people are high on with the way he plays football and stops the run and uses his hand and his violence in the middle of the offensive line. But that would be one, Speaks, that I would say, okay, now you had a chance there to add a guy who just plays left tackle, right? Like, just you had all your answers there. You had Darnell Wright. You had your whole line. Plug that guy in. Let him compete against Braxton Jones and Kron Amagaji. Instead, you left a little questions out there. So that's one a little bit that I'll be looking at down the years, obviously, a Monday morning quarterback, right? Like, why didn't you just take the left tackle? But that's one. If you ask me what I'm looking at, that would be it.
There was a point last season, I think it was the Arizona game, where I realized, oh, no, the defense might not be that great. The run defense mm-hmm. may not be mm-hmm. because James Conner was doing his thing. Amari DiMarcado had that, like, 58-yard run at the end of the half, and you're like, mm-hmm. what the hell is going on? The Bears this year signed, that was very passive-aggressive, Grady yes. Jarrett this year, mm-hmm. and they go and draft Shamar Turner. How much better, if at all, do you think the defensive line will be this year?
And I don't got to tell you this, Gross, but so is Billings coming back, right? They missed yes. him a lot last year. I think he got hurt, right? I think it was yeah. that game or the game before.
But, you love Billings.
Grady Jackson. Yeah. Yes, as you guys know. Really do like Andrew Billings. I love the way he plays football. They were playing him at three technique last year. That's how good of a football player. That's how the level he was playing at. But, yeah, they take Shamar Turner to bring in Grady Jarrett. Grady Jarrett, his film speaks for itself. Obviously, he's getting a little older, but there's young guys like Javon Dexter. You want to see him take another step, put him next to Montez Sweat, right? So it's just kind of I may not agree with everything they did to rebuild their lines, but they have rebuilt them in the way that they want to rebuild them, right? So we'll see if their plan works out. But like you're saying, Billings coming back, Grady Jarrett, they got an extra second round pick. I'm saying they shouldn't have. I'm saying stick there, take the left tackle, but they did, right? They got Shamar Turner. They add him to the room. I do love, man. I don't know how you can't love the violence that young man puts on film oh, yeah. with his hands and the way he unrolls his hips and the way he gets rid of offensive linemen. You do love that with Javon Dexter. Hopefully Pickens can learn from these guys, maybe take a step. I don't know if he's the odd man out now in this group, but they have added assets to the line rooms, which Speaks knows I've been screaming about for too long now.
Yeah, you have. Man, you know, the burden pick, I feel you. Oh, like I really like it because I think it's going to mm-hmm. let Ben Johnson be creative. But mm-hmm. Does this feel different than last year when it was so obvious that they were falling in love with the weaponry, you know, and they thought they could be this cute ass three wide receiver team that threw it mm-hmm. with Shane Waldron and then trick you into then being able to run? Like Ben's thought process, I think, is different. Does it feel different? Even though they spent assets on tight end and wide receiver, does it feel a little different?
Yeah, and a tight end is basically another wide receiver, right?
Yeah. So
when you look at it, and the kids, his route running is exceptional. He did have that shoulder injury that you worry about a little bit when you watch him on film last year. They weren't using him in line. Sometimes you can see him grabbing his shoulder, and maybe that affected his blocking. And as young as he is, maybe he can grow. And he's a big guy, right? He's 6'6", 250. I mean, that kind of guy can grow into a blocking tight end. But like you're saying, Speaks, you worry a little bit about, okay, pass-catching tight end, then a wide receiver. You guys heard me say on the draft show, it just seems like they're drafting guys to outsmart everybody, put my weapons on the field. And look, with Ben Johnson and the way they do things, that could work. But as you guys know me and the way I look at football, line up, beat them up, let's win football games that way. But they did. They did get offensive linemen, right? They went and got Ozzie Tripillo. That's not a low pick in the second round. They got Shamar Turner there too. So they did get two more picks, get two more linemen to put in to those rooms to beat guys up. to get after guys late in December at Soldier Field. How do we win football games? Got to run downhill, got to make plays, got to make the tough yards, get the tough gains, get after people. So we will see as this goes on. And people are really high on Luther Bird, and you can see why when he catches the ball and after the catch and the kind of handful he is for nickelbacks and linebackers to cover him in the slot. So like the plan, I got to be honest, when I take a step back, there's things that, you know, we all say, man, I would have done this, because it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback when you're not in the building up there at Halas Hall. But when you take a step back and look at everything they've done this offseason with the coaching staff, with the guys they sign in free agencies, with the draft pick, this is a vastly improved football team. And if you think about the guys they've already have in that building, you say to yourself, okay, man, it's time for them to take a step, right? It's time for Darnell Wright to become an all-pro. It's time for him to become an all-pro, to take a leadership role in that locker room. Time for Romo Dunze to take a step. Caleb, of course, man, he's the guy. Right, we're talking about all this stuff. It's been a luxury this year, guys, not to talk about the quarterback. Don't talk about the quarterback, but it's been a luxury for us to complain about other things. Why can't the Bears take all these other positions? Because they got their quarterback, man. And that, when you check that off, and he's got to take a step, and he's got to play better. And if he does, and all of a sudden you got the mind that we all think Ben Johnson is he a leader? Can he be a head coach at his young age? Can Declan Doyle take a step, help him create schemes and plays against other teams? But as you guys can hear in my voice, the more I look at this team, the more I look at the way they're built, they got a chance, man. Now, guys got to take steps. Guys got to improve. Guys got to show they can do the things that they're capable of doing. But they have now, Ryan Poles has built a team that looks like they can maybe take a step if everyone grows the way they're supposed to grow together.
So with all that goodness, Olin, and that was great, yes, do these guys now look better in their suits? Does Kevin, does Warren look better in his suit? Does Ben Johnson look better in his suit?
It is time to write poems, right? We all write poems now, right? Go to Byron Piccolo Award Ceremony, write a poem, throw your linebacker under the bus. You know, that's all the feel-good moments that we can do there. But
who did they throw under the bus?
It's just that
TJ Edwards, right? He said.
Oh yeah. Right. You did say that.
That was the bus running him over. But hey, he got a new contract, so he's just laughing about it, right? I got my money. I'm good. Listen, they haven't won, right? They have one winning season in 12 years, right? So it leaves you skeptical. It leaves you thinking about this football team and can they get moving in the right direction? And then can they create the thing, guys, that everyone always talks about in football, but no one can describe? Can they create culture there, a winning culture, do things that it takes week in and week out to win in the NFL, which is extremely hard to do. Mm-hmm. But we will see as this year goes on.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Olin, you're the man. That's a good looking Miami of Ohio volleyball sweatshirt you're rocking right there. Congrats.
Thank you.
Congrats to your daughter, Grace, a commit for the 2025 yes. team.
Oh, wow.
That's really cool. What's her level of toughness and competitiveness?
Toughest kid I got. Tougher than the two boys in Illinois. She will compete now. She competes on a volleyball court. She gets after people. There is something we expect in this house, as you guys know me by now, and we hold people to that standard.
That's awesome.
Those poor boys.
Well, hey man, it's like you got to be a badass to be as good as she is, and on her way to Miami. Thanks, Olin. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it, guys. Man, have a great day.
All right, man. You got it. Yeah, I saw the sweatshirt. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. And then I'm here on the Miami Redhawks website, right? And the coach of the Miami Redhawks on Grace Kreutz, quote, "Grace is a great athlete and incredibly competitive."
That's fantastic.
Is the quote about Grace.
The boys are listening like, what the hell, Dad?
Yeah. She's one of those people who's going to find her way onto the court no matter what.
Nice.
Even as a freshman.
Nice. Strengths and weaknesses, go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can't break it down. Grace will be fun to watch. There's no doubt she will bring it to our gym every day.
Wow.
Does that sound like a Kreutz or what?
I was going
to
say, that definitely sounds like a 57.
Damn right. 670 The Score. It's Spiegs and Mark Grody on the Spiegel and Ohm Show. Let's give some love to a departing legend and add some context on what we think makes a GOAT. We'll do it next on the
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down. we've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I might swerve in that corner.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Okay.
See, we're in full service, 670 The Score station.
Afternoons on The Score.
And what specifically about Pop helped you?
I mean, he challenged me beyond my imagination on and off the court to develop, to be a better individual. But on the court, you know, he just brought a lot of things out of me that I didn't know was in there at that point in my career, you know. And I gotta give so much credit to him for that, because, you know, he took that stance the first day I came to San Antonio, and it did so much for me to be the player I am now.
Well, that's beautiful to hear DeMar DeRozan right there talking about Greg Popovich like that, because Pop as a dude, seemingly just remarkable. Having read a lot about stuff that has gone on in San Antonio, you know, a charity center that he dreamed of, conceived, designed, and built, that is doing unbelievable things there. 26 years as the coach of the Spurs, announced today that he is going to be moved to team president. He's done as a coach after what appears to have been a stroke of some kind last year during the beginning part of the season. So rough stuff. And certainly one of the greatest NBA coaches of all time. So all respect to Pop as a dude and as a coach, but it got us thinking about that. And we keep thinking about it, at least I do anyway, across a lot of different sports. But let's stick to the NBA right now. I've got some thoughts. But Mark Grody, what are your thoughts on Greg Popovich? 26 years, won, I believe, 5 titles in a 9-year span.
Yeah, you can't deny that. I'll take a little bit of exception to the great guy part. I mean, he was kind of a tool to reporters for a long time, and I know it became a joke, but remember how rude he could be to the sideline reporters at NBA games during games, like, and he made it into a funny thing, so I'm not letting him slide on that stuff. But yeah, undeniable when you're a 5-time champion, but he was one of those coaches in the category of unbelievable luck with the players that he had on his watch, from Tim Duncan to Kawhi Leonard to
Manu Ginobili,
Tony Parker, all of those guys. So it gets,
even David Robinson, Sean Elliott,
Yeah, so he has been blessed. Now, again, there is something to getting groups of players like that over the top to actually win titles.
And some of those players, especially the young ones like Parker, he developed into becoming what he became.
Got to give him credit for that, no doubt about it. But it does make it fuzzy in terms of how good of a coach was he really. I mean, that we heard DeMar DeRozan coming in. Unfortunately, I love the relationship those guys had, but he was part of the Kawhi Leonard trade. That's a bad moment for the organization, losing Kawhi Leonard along with Danny Green. So you're still left with some good players like LaMarcus Aldridge on that roster, but there's the correlation with the downfall, if you want to call it that, of this version of the Spurs. All of a sudden, the cupboard is finally empty, and the coach doesn't look so good anymore.
Yeah, and things have been bad in terms of the win losses until Wembanyama gets there, and then now Wembanyama with the blood clots and stuff like that. Yeah, you know, I understand completely what you're saying. It's 5 titles in a 9-year span, all of them with Tim Duncan. So it's not like, for instance, Phil Jackson had 2 three-peats with superstars, obviously, here in Chicago, and took over when the team was kind of mostly built, but does deserve credit. Then goes to LA and gets 3 titles with Shaq and Kobe. But then he also gets 2 more titles with Kobe and Pau Gasol. So that, to me, that's already a differentiator, especially the Pau part, because as great as they were, it's a different, very different kind of player, different kind of style, a little bit. I mean, still triangle, but anyway, it's like fitting the pieces in, and Pau is very different than Shaq. So I give him some more credit in that way, in terms of like being able to get it done with great players, but at least different styles.
I'll also give him 1994 with the Bulls when Jordan was gone, and they should have, if it had not been for Hugh Hollins, the Bulls should have been in the Eastern Conference Finals that year. And who knows, may have gone on to meet probably the Spurs. Would it have been the Spurs that year
if they would have gotten past?
They still had a ways to go.
It was the Rockets,
of course, Hakeem Olajuwon and that version of the team. But I'm thinking too, like even guys like Steve Kerr, like all of a sudden Steve Kerr has just been powerless once the and I know that they've been good, but like the breakup of that team, all of a sudden it's like Steve Kerr, like everybody, the greatest coach, all of a sudden he doesn't quite look so powerful. Bill Belichick,
but some of it though, well, Belichick, of course, we're crossing sports. Let's stay in the basketball for 1 second.
Okay,
some of it is the happenstance of what you have, the good fortune or the lack of good fortune if you're just a coach. But you know, it's interesting things like Pat Riley won Coach of the Year for 3 different franchises. Only guy ever to do that. Lakers, Knicks, and Heat.
That's pretty good.
That's impressive, right?
Yeah.
How about this one? I was looking around at some of this stuff. Don Nelson won 300 games, I believe, with 3 different franchises.
Golden State.
Milwaukee Bucks.
Uh-huh.
And Dallas Mavericks.
Yes, yes.
So that's pretty amazing that he was that good for that long with 3 different places. I kept looking around. Made the playoffs. I think Dr. Jack Ramsey made the playoffs with 4 different teams. Okay. Larry Brown? Anybody want to guess how many different teams Larry Brown made the playoffs with in NBA history?
I'm going to say, since you said it like that, 5?
8.
Wow.
Dude took 8 teams to the playoffs.
Well, he was just such a great, like, you listen to that guy talking about basketball. Billy Donovan, it's great hearing Tim talk about basketball. Larry Brown talks circles around Billy Donovan.
But the same kind of like NBA lifestyle.
Similar.
Lifer. But Larry Brown would just like, just leave and go places. I mean, like when Patino does it again with St. John's here, you're like, oh my God, that dude, he just freaking builds and builds and builds. And then it might blow up, but everywhere he goes, he builds. There's something incredibly awesome. Like Larry Brown deserves comment in these conversations.
How about somebody like he's not historic by any means, but like let's say 3 or 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when Pop was still Pop, would you have rather had Popovich as your head coach or Eric Spoelstra as your head coach? Which one, like you think of Phil Jackson versus Eric Spoelstra, who to me is like one of the best coaches in the league, even though he doesn't have quite the resume.
Yeah, Spoelstra is real good though. He got to a finals with Butler.
Yeah.
And he also, of course, got it done with his big 3 of Braun and Wade and,
yeah, you
and
to,
Bosch.
Right, and so that has to be mentioned.
Yeah, for sure. And he took over when, you know, Pat kicked himself upstairs. And and that was that. Or was it Stan Van Gundy? Yeah. Was it Stan Van Gundy?
Was it Stan?
No, see, I always mix it up because Van Gundy was the coach of the Heat when Shaq and D. Wade were there. And then he got kicked out to go spend more time with his family.
Ah, yes, family
sentence. So Pat Riley could take over.
You shall leave now. Yeah. Your sentence is 3.5 years with your family unless there's good behavior.
I'm not going to quarrel with you on Pop as a bad guy because he treated sideline reporters poorly.
I don't know if he's a bad guy. I'm just saying I'm not going to put the halo over his head.
Well, it doesn't have to be one or the other. We don't have to go to complete extremes.
Exactly.
Because he also had a sense of humor about what a tool he was, to your point.
Well,
he made it
eventually
a bit.
He did. Made it. You know, it's like Marshawn Lynch, kind of, right? Like, he was kind of a tool to the media, and then he made a bit out of it, and now he's living off of it. Exactly. So, but you got to remember that it started from him doing stuff. Like, you asked those sideline reporters about it. I don't think they thought it was very funny.
I understand. How about this? I saw this today as well. There are five coaches who played directly for and or coached under Greg Popovich. Okay? Will Hardy, Steve Kerr, Doc Rivers, Quinn Snyder, Ime Udoka, right now. There are three others who just got fired during the year. Mike Brown, Mike Budenholzer, Taylor Jenkins, who also coached for Popovich.
Wow.
That's eight. There's two more that were Popovich assistants while he was with USA Basketball. So that's 10. There are 10 coaches in the NBA who were Greg Popovich assistants.
That is an NBA tree. We do that so much with the NFL, but my God, that's pretty amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, you get touched by the angel of Popovich, and you may now become a head coach. You might get fired, but you know you will be a head coach.
Yeah. All right, so I asked you before the show, as we were talking about this and kicking around, who I might reference as the NFL version or the NFL head coach who doesn't get enough conversation as the greatest of all time.
Yes, and you said you're not going to give it up to us. So now we are going to hear it. So it's obviously not Bill Belichick.
It is not.
Because that's, of course, that's the go-to. That's the reflex when we talk about GOAT currently for NFL. Spiegel, will you reveal to all of us, because I see Sean Sears over there, Alex Kuhn. We've been sweating waiting for this.
Yeah, I'll do it after the break. So which NFL coach am I thinking? And actually, there's two. I think there's two that don't get enough mention.
Are they currently coaching, or do you not want to give that up?
Keep listening to 670 The Score. We'll discuss this next here with Spiegel and Holmes.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Go ahead, listeners. Get that stirred up.
All right, well, it's definitely stirred up now. You know, you're on the...
He's the best.
No, you know, I don't know. Nobody listens to me. That's fine. But,
this is the most popular radio show in Chicago.
Well, so. I know. Okay, you said it, Lawrence, not me, but...
We'll send you the book.
Yeah, send me the book.
Afternoons on the Score.
It's a very readable book. It is. It's full of numbers and stuff, but I find it extremely readable. It's a Spiegel and Holmes show. Here on 670 The Score, I'm Speaks. He's Mark Grody. We're hanging out on a Friday. You sent out the audio bat signal for Barry Rosner, and then I sent out the text bat signal for Barry Rosner. I have no response yet, but okay. I think when it's you and me, we just kind of, we lollygag our way around the infield. We lollygag our way around the outfield. You know what that makes us? Lollygaggers, sir.
Well, lollygaggers.
That's right. So... Yeah, you know, it feels Rosner-ish when you and I are together.
Barry, I hope that you come on with us. We won't ask you about any relevant sports
Nothing.
Or things that happened
Nothing.
Within the last 5 years.
If you are Barry Rosner out there, probably not. There's no chance he's listening. Or if you know Barry Rosner, go ahead and hit him up. Although, yeah. You know, I hit him up too. But I love that. I love using the airwaves just to call for a former host.
It usually works, actually. So what other former host do we want to have on, too? If Barry can't come on.
Let's stop right there. Okay.
Well, hold on. Oh,
just
I'm being asked to call to the office. I will be.
Come on. Nothing bad. Stop by for a quickie.
Stop by.
So, who's the greatest coach in of NFL history to you? Who's number one for you?
Well, Mike Ditka. No. I guess. Jesus. Bill Walsh.
Bill Walsh, in terms of importance and what he did.
Yeah, I'm going to say Bill Walsh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand why you'd say that. And, and most important and most vital, you know, you could put Lombardi there too.
He invented the West Coast offense.
Sure.
Right?
Lombardi perfected the Packers sweep and built an amazing thing.
Overrated.
Well, you know, Belichick gets a mention. These days, Andy Reid gets a mention and gets brought up. And I understand why they do it. But the guy I want to stump for, nobody knows. Nobody has this figured out.
Is he a current coach?
No, he's not.
Because I was going to,
who are we going to guess? Mike Tomlin?
I was going to say Mike Tomlin. How about Chuck Knoll?
Chuck Knoll is an interesting one. Chuck Knoll should get credit because he was a big part of those drafts, and they drafted amazing, amazing players.
Tom Landry is not on my list.
No. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Shula.
Oh.
Don Shula helped the Colts be great. I know he lost to Namath as the Colts head coach with Johnny Unitas, but he also won a crap ton of games with the Colts. And then he goes to Miami, and he does what he does in Miami, building these incredible teams around the rushing game, a team that goes undefeated, and he wins a couple Super Bowls in a row with the Dolphins and Bob Greasy, Larry Zonka, etc. And then later on in his career, he gets Dan Marino, and he's like, forget this whole run game thing that I did. I think I should become the most explosive passing offense in the history of the league.
Yeah.
And completely adapts and adjusts with Marino, makes it to a Super Bowl, has like another great decade with Marino. And oh, by the way, in between, he went to a Super Bowl with a guy named David Woodley as the quarterback.
Oh, wow.
He went to the Super Bowl with the Dolphins, Fulton Walker, David with a Woodley. Kickoff return for a touchdown against the Redskins at the time. But anyway, David Woodley?
That's pretty amazing.
He went to Super Bowls with Greasy and Woodley and Marino.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And Johnny Unitas.
Yeah. No, actually, Marino.
How about that career?
Did Marino make it to a Super Bowl?
Yeah, second year.
Oh, he did.
Second year against Montana, and that's it. Never got back.
Yeah, never won a Super Bowl. Yeah, no, that's pretty amazing. And it's such a good point about
the adaptation, man.
Wow, because, yeah, that is. That when Marino comes in, that's 1984,
yes,
right?
Yes,
or in 85, yes. And
turns the league on its head.
Right. That running was the most important thing in the NFL. Then everybody did it. Those were the people that were taking tops in the draft. And he's like, all right, here's Mark Clayton and Mark Duper and Tony Nathan.
Let's go.
Your running back.
100%
and
correct.
And we're just gonna fling it down the field.
And this is a guy who you know went undefeated with Mercury Morris and Larry Zonka, both getting 1,000 yards.
That's a great call.
And so he does it the other way. Marino threw what, 48 touchdown passes?
And ironically, because I guess I didn't really think about it that way, that he had adapted. Obviously he did. Ironically, didn't those two clash eventually? Wasn't that part? I think Marino had some issues ultimately with Don Shula. I don't know if it was about game plan, but that's the irony to the whole thing. That's why I was kind of thinking to myself, he kind of screwed up that era because he didn't let Marino, but to your point, he did let Marino be Marino.
Texter, Sean in Charlotte says, that's a bold take, naming Don Shula, who has the most wins as a head coach and the only perfect season.
For the win.
But Sean doesn't get the love in these conversations.
Yeah,
you hear Belichick and you hear
Andy Reid, as you just brought up.
Here's the other one that deserves some mention to me is Joe Gibbs. 16 years in Washington.
Yep.
He won 3 Super Bowls with 3 different starting quarterbacks.
Oh, man.
Joe Theismann, Doug Williams, and Mark Rippon. He won a Super Bowl with Mark Rippon.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
So, you know, to your point, that's why it ties into the point that you were making about whether you have superstars or not.
Right. Well, real quick, low key.
No, you don't have to be quick.
Jimmy Johnson. Do we think about Jimmy Johnson? Maybe he was more of an innovator or a difference maker. And I know that the Herschel Walker trade changed everything. He probably should have been. He should have been in Dallas longer, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But he had the clash with Jerry Jones. I think about him and the way he approached the draft and the way he built the team. And obviously, there was loads of talent, but he had something to do with that. So Jimmy Johnson is a guy that I think of, and he's just outside of that box of guys. But just in terms of a raw coach,
not long enough to really have the flexibility for that I'm looking for.
In the conversation. And he never really got there with Miami, right? I mean, he coaches the Miami Dolphins, and then Wani eventually takes over.
No, you're right.
For the Dolphins. So if he had done better with Miami, then maybe he's in the conversation. The Belichick thing gets clouded a little bit too.
Of course it does.
One winning season after Tom Brady left, and you know, I give him some credit for being able to do that by running the hell out of the football.
Well, that's the thing about Belichick. I give Bill a lot of credit for adaptation.
Yeah,
because
Mac Jones. Remember that. There was a game.
Sure, but even within the Brady career, think about the beginning of Brady's career when it was defense and running the ball with Antoine Smith and Corey Dillon and whatever guys like that. And then he realizes that he's got to adapt, and he becomes this explosive offense with Brady turning into Dan Marino plus.
And he had the balls to bench Drew Brees. I mean, Drew Bledsoe. What was he, number 2 overall pick in the draft?
Bledsoe?
Yeah, Bledsoe. I mean, something like
that. High.
He was like a top five draft pick.
I don't care. Something good's happening here.
Sixth round or seventh round or whatever Tom Brady was.
Six,
like that takes like organizationally to be like, guess what I'm going to do, Mr. Kraft? I'm going to bench the number 2 overall draft pick for this sixth rounder from Michigan. What?
A texter reminds me that the Colts went to that Super Bowl where they lost to the Namath Jets with Earl Morrill as the quarterback because Johnny Unitas was hurt all year.
Oh, Earl Morrill.
That's a great point. And then Earl Morrill later on was a backup in Miami for Greasy. So So yeah, so Shula went to the Super Bowl with Earl Morrill, Bob Greasy, David Woodley, and Dan Marino.
Wow, a little bit of re-unearthing of Don Shula on the score today. That's strong.
Yeah, so I am going to, yes, controversially take the winningest football coach of all time as the best football coach of all time.
Somebody's asking us here, where do you guys hold Tom Coughlin in this? He did have a lot of wins with Mark Brunell and that whole Jack. I mean, was he their original head coach?
I think he was.
He was, yeah.
I think he was. I think he launched that whole thing.
It was they and I think Carolina that came in together or right around then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at the wins for him. I mean, I think we're getting into a different category though,
yeah,
when we start to talk about guys like that. Really good head coaches, but not in that elite
circle. He's not in that circle.
Can't put him there.
I have enjoyed this impromptu run through NFL memory lane.
That was fun, and I don't think I derailed it too much.
You're due for another couple of derailments. Mm-hmm. Did you derail? When is it? Alex, you're in charge of this. When is he supposed to derail? At 37?
4:15.
With 37. Remember, it was going to be an hourly derailment because he did
say
it
on the sevens. He
on
did.
The on the 37s. Sean, you're not listening either. What are these
Friday,
people doing?
Man. Wait, how long has Mark Grody been on this show?
Yeah, good question. Alex is like 4:15. What does that have to do with anything?
A texter did point out that when we started to do the NBA topic, I tried to derail it by going right to the NFL, but you were like, Grody, no. We're staying in the NBA.
Oh, yeah, it's
so
my
that,
bad.
That was No, so you're good. I didn't derail it.
No, you tried to derail it.
Right, so you protected the show, okay, and the audience and right, our producers who are not listening to us from derailment.
We have a lot to do. And what seems to be, you know, like a bi-monthly exercise for me. I need to figure out if a movie is appropriate to watch with my son tonight.
Okay.
It's an 80s comedy, so that's a rough start to begin with, right?
Is it a John Hughes movie?
No.
Okay.
Although that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, he might laugh at Breakfast Club.
Or
Breakfast Club might be, but I don't know if he'll think
Weird
it's...
Weird Science, like, maybe.
We've done Weird Science.
16 Candles.
Yeah, no, haven't done that one. Back to School. What do we think about Back to School?
Hilarious.
I adore Back to School.
Rodney Dangerfield.
Rodney and the whole Kurt Vonnegut thing in there. Whoever wrote this doesn't know the first thing about Kurt Vonnegut. I mean, I don't know if he's going to get half the jokes, though. I don't know. Yeah. But it's still pretty funny.
Do you think you got half the jokes when you first saw that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Absolutely.
Aren't you just an elitist? You got it all, huh, Mr.
You know that.
Vonnegut over
yeah,
here.
You know yeah. that. Groats? Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, I grew up, we weren't allowed to read Vonnegut.
I'm an intellectual jackass.
I know you are.
You know that. I've always been.
Yeah.
I'm a fake man of the people.
Pseudo man of the people. Pseudo intellectual. Yeah. You're Brian on the Family Guy.
All right, so I'll figure out if Back to School is age appropriate or not. Probably okay. not. When we come back, what kind of culture are we looking at for the Bears wide receiver room? Charles Davis has taken the North.
Yes, he has.
And we will discuss next on The Score.